You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We are back at the University of Florida for the second hour of the program. The first hour was quite good. We had Tim Tebow on. They got statues named after him here. And probably who knows what else in the future. He's still only 15 years old. Anyway, welcome back. It's great to have all of you here. We are inside. For those of you watching, wondering why we are not in our usual setup. We may be later, but there are some thunderstorms around. That's why we were put inside. And the people behind us are like looking in to see the lion at the zoo, which is me, of course. The Lion King here in the land of gators. We head to the land of the dogs right now. Molly McGrath joining us. She'll be part of the broadcast tomorrow night. And Molly, great to see you. It looks like the weather a little bit better where you are. How are you? Get us ready for this game tomorrow night, which Gamecock fans are really optimistic about. I'm not sure why, but maybe you have a clue.
Yeah, Paul, so good to see you and hear your voice. I'm on the field here at Sanford Stadium. All is quiet right now, but it's going to be a lot different tomorrow night when SEC play kicks off for the Bulldogs. And Zeb Nolan, the South Carolina quarterback, is a big reason why fans are so excited. This is one of the best stories in college football. He was a GA for the team. He was a backup at Iowa State, a backup at North Dakota State for Trey Lance. And then he comes over to South Carolina as a GA, and he's throwing balls to receivers in the summer. And the coaches said, wow, this guy has a good arm on him. If only he was still eligible. It's a joke. And he does have a year of eligibility. And then Luke Doty, their original starter, goes down with a foot sprain. So Zeb Noland is the guy. Paul, he grew up 10 minutes away, about 5-6 miles away from Sanford Stadium. He always dreamed of playing on this grass. He grew up going to games here at Georgia. So this is a really special storyline and a full circle moment for him. And South Carolina fans are really positive because of him and the feel-good story with Zeb Noland, but also because of Shane Beamer. You guys just showed a bunch of clips of Shane Beamer. He's one of the most likable guys in college football, I think. And he's brought a belief, a love, a respect to this program. Players tell me the word love is thrown around every single day. That's not something you hear a lot in college football, but he's brought this new culture there where they love on each other hard. They work hard. And Beamer said, don't mistake love for soft. Love can be vicious when you're fighting for the guy alongside you. So I love what he's doing at South Carolina.
Talking to Molly McGrath at the University of Georgia. Molly, you mentioned the quarterback situation at South Carolina. What is the quarterback situation at UGA right now?
Well, you know, Paul, every time a coach refuses to name a starting quarterback, a sideline reporter gets her wings. Like, I have dealt with so many coaches not wanting to tell me who their starting quarterback is. And we just met with Kirby Smart recently, just about a couple hours ago, and he still won't commit to a starter. Stetson Bennett really impressed last week in place of an injured JT Daniels, who's still dealing with an oblique strain, something that he re-aggravated in that week one game against Clemson. He won't commit to Daniels as the starter, but I do know that JT Daniels looks and feels better than he has in the last 2 weeks. He's been throwing the football well, but both guys have been sharing reps 50-50 in practice. They've both seen the same amount of time with the first team offense. So I have a feeling we'll probably see both quarterbacks in this game.
Yeah, because, I mean, last week at this very same moment, we were expecting one and ended up seeing the other. And it just seems like that is a confusing issue for Georgia, even though we all expected JT Daniels to be a contender for the Heisman at this point in time. Let's talk a little bit about the identity of this Georgia offense and in terms of what you're hearing from not only Kirby, but the coordinator.
Yeah, I think the identity of this Georgia offense is the fact that they want to create more explosive plays. They were able to do that a little bit in the passing game, you know, against Clemson and UAB, but they really want to be able to do that more in the run game and lean on their running backs. And I think the thing with JT Daniels is he is the guy who's going to take them far down the stretch. You mentioned the fact that, you know, people are talking about him for the Heisman. They don't want to rush him back from this injury too soon, and then he's not able to play during SEC play. So I think they want to take their time with him, make sure he's 100%. But JT Daniels has lost a starting job before. You remember at USC, he lost that job to Keaton Slovis. That's why he's here at Georgia. I think seeing Stetson Bennett sling it and throw for 5 touchdowns in the first half last week lit a fire under him, and he wants to get back on this football field. The team just does not want him to rush back too soon because he's going to be so important to their offense and their identity if they want to get far this season.
Molly, weather has been an issue down here. Now, again, I realize we're in Florida, not Georgia. The game tomorrow night, I'm not trying to turn you into a Weather Channel reporter, but does it look pretty good?
I've been a Weather Channel reporter for ESPN for so many years, Paul. I'm always on the sidelines getting soaked. I'll tell you this, it's clear right now, but it is really muggy, really humid, and really swampy. And it's expected, rain is expected on and off all day tomorrow. So that's another interesting storyline going into this game where we could see 4 quarterbacks between the two teams. And so that's definitely going to affect what these teams are able to do offensively. It could be kind of an ugly slog of a game if it continues and if it rains tomorrow.
Molly, thank you. It's so good to see you, and we always enjoy visiting on these Friday afternoons.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Paul. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks so much. Molly McGrath from Sanford Stadium, the site of tomorrow night's South Carolina game. We'll try to grab a few more phone calls in here. Roman Harper joining us in a few minutes. Scott Strickland. We've already had Tim Tebow and Holly Rowe. Let's check in with Scott, who is in Georgia right now. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Scott, we're doing great. Thank you.
I just want to call in and say I'm retired. Love watching your show. Watch it every day. I especially like it on Friday before the games. And just keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate your kind words. And I hope – what are you doing in retirement? Out of you have anything specific, or are you just taking it
easy?
I like it. Well, you've worked hard enough. You might as well enjoy it. I always hate people that retire, then they keep doing something, and that's not the whole. That's not the reason to retire.
I agree with you.
Well, take care of yourself.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, well, I hear you. Scott, thanks, Scott. Yeah, every time I hear somebody talk about retirement, they go, what are you going to do? Well, it's the whole purpose. You're not going to do anything. Thanks for the call. Charlie is up next. Hey, Charlie, go right ahead.
Your thoughts on the Ole Miss Tulane game this weekend? I know Tulane's looked pretty sharp in their first two games, and that big game against Oklahoma, you never know if they played that game at home. But definitely you don't want Ole Miss to look ahead to Alabama in 2 weeks. So I was just wondering your thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I do think, and I'm in the majority here, who think this is a really dangerous game for Ole Miss. I think they're a better team. That goes without saying. I think Ole Miss is one of the better teams in the SEC right now, but you just don't know the mindset. This is not a game on paper that you would be too concerned about, but we had Willie Fritz on maybe 2 weeks ago. He's done a great job, and that program, in spite of everything, has looked great this year. So I would be a little concerned. I think Ole Miss has just so much offense, so much firepower. And, the Ole Miss game is – the Ole Miss-Alabama game is still a long time off, 2 weeks. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We are going to take a break here because Roman Harper is on deck. We will talk to him and more of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and we're glad you're with us. Roman Harper, as he does every Friday, dropping by here. And Roman, good to see you.
Thank you, Paul.
Let's start here. This is the game, the number one game in the country. The fans here are really fired up. And as you look at this matchup, you look for certain things when you go over tape. What stands out?
For me, it's going to really come down to the explosiveness of Florida's run game and the different options that they bring with both quarterbacks, Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson. They're a lot of the same, but way different, especially with the offense and what all they're going to be able to do and accomplish with each quarterback in the game. And also, can the Florida's defense actually slow down Alabama's offense enough to keep them in the game, force turnovers, or do something to kind of throw them off track? Because from what I've seen in the last year and a half, Florida has not slowed down Alabama, so it doesn't matter how good your offense is if you defensively cannot stop the other team. You don't have a chance of winning that game. So can they hold Alabama under 40 points? Can they hold them under 30 points? If they do that, they can have a really good chance of winning this game.
Can anyone?
I haven't seen it yet, Paul. I got to be honest. I look at these both these teams. It's just, and I'm not going to go schematically and all these other things and talk over everybody's head, Paul. But this is from the rooftop, from the treetops. Let's look at it. All right. You look at Alabama. You don't look at Alabama and say, man, they've really like taken a step back offensively or defensively. You don't say that. And when you look at Florida, do you look at Florida's offense and say they are as good as they were last year? You would say no, they're not. Are they better defensively? Maybe, okay, possibly. But when you say those things right there, it looks like Alabama's still Alabama, and for everybody else is everybody else.
Okay, so let's get to – I don't even know if it's an X factor, but it's at least perceptibly a big advantage for Florida, and that's playing at the Swamp.
Yes.
It has one of the most feared reputations in college football. It has not always affected Alabama. I've been here with Alabama. You've been here with Alabama.
No, I've never been here, Paul.
Oh, okay.
I was about to give you
a win you don't deserve.
I would have taken it. If it wasn't for the camera, I would have taken it.
I mean, I know the years you played, and you beat Alabama at home, right?
Yeah, we beat Florida at home, yes.
Florida at home,
yes.
Yeah, I do remember that game. That was a beatdown.
It was a beatdown, yes.
Okay, but you never got here.
We never made it here. It was in that sixth year where I'm out of school now. As much as I wanted to stay out.
Okay, let's stop the tape. Let's start the interview over, and I'll excise that out. Okay, so I don't care whether you played here or not. You know the reputation.
Everybody knows about it. Look, I played NCAA football in the video game where Florida was the hardest place to play at in all the video game. It had everything going. My brother played with them all the time, and I couldn't get any of my audibles and checks. That will be an issue at times. But if Alabama's preparing the right way, nothing ever shocks them. You never see a Nick Saban team unprepared for any type of moment outside of the kick six when they looked like they had never covered.
Yeah, they were not ready for that.
Right, they were not ready for that. Other than that, they're always expecting, they're always ready and prepared. So I don't think the crowd noise will play as big of a factor. And also, the best crowds that are really home field advantages, it's also about when they're loud. When are they yelling at their loudest? Are they the loudest, like Seattle, the 12th man? They're called a 12th man because they really affect the game. You know, when you're under the center, your quarterback's under center, that is when they are the loudest. Or when your quarterback's trying to make a check, they sense that and they get louder there. So not only that, but they track the stat of, you know, how many times has the team jumped off sides? How many times has the team had a false start or a delay of game? So they have reasoning behind
it. So how do you prepare to play in a place like this?
Well, the only thing you can do as a team is really just have the music pumped up as loud as you can.
Does that help?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
I mean, it's part of it, Paul. I don't think it ever really helps. You know, we all just do these same things over and over and over to tell ourselves this is all that we can do to make our teams prepared for this moment.
It seems like something you hear during the game broadcast. You know, they go down to the field and Holly Rose says on Tuesday night, and I'm like going, but it never really seems like it factors.
Because the crowd's not affecting the game all the time. At the end of the day, you still got to kick the ball off. Right. And you still got to play the game within whistle to whistle. Like, nobody's yelling the whole game. Nobody does that. So, especially if – what if Alabama gets up 14 points or 10 points? The crowd still is loud.
No.
All right? That's exactly what I'm saying.
You're lucky if you can hear them.
Right. And then, but if Florida's up 10 –
sure.
They're extremely loud because now they got the momentum and all those other things. It's a game of momentum and emotions, and the crowd is all the same. They're all emotional.
You always hear the crowd being a factor right. for the quarterback. I'm going to flip it around. On the defensive side, how does the crowd affect you?
Well, because I played on the defense side in a loud stadium for home field advantage in New Orleans, what we did, the whole year, all we did was practice with noise because we wanted the noise all the time as an advantage for us because we knew that now it takes out – one thing that it does do, Paul, it does not allow the offense to go on second count. So you can't hut and get guys to jump off sides because nobody can hear anything. So you don't have to worry about that. So you got a hand signal or a flash or something that's your key that you got to get ready to go. Or when you're going to show your hand defensively, you're going off of signals and keys. And defensively, we always worked on our hand signals because you couldn't communicate because we knew we had a crowd and being as loud as we wanted them to be, we never depended on somebody actually hearing what we're saying. Everything has to be communicated through sign language. And once you get all that down, you're used to it. It's all second language, and now it becomes an advantage for your defense.
Talking to Roman Harper here about the game, we talked to Tim Tebow earlier about the quarterback situation and for Florida.
Yes,
we know what it is for Alabama.
Yeah, we do.
Take us into the mindset of Pete Golding and his group. You know, everyone is so impressed with the Alabama defense. As you're preparing for two quarterbacks, how does that change or does it change?
Well, I think you got to understand the running game when both quarterbacks are up. When you have Emory Jones, the whole playbook is up. They're going to throw the ball to Emory Jones and they're going to work the middle of the field. They're going to run their normal offense with sprinkled in some offense, some run plays and some quarterback runs off of that. And so you got to be ready for that. And so it's normal defense. Everything's ready. We just got to be able to tackle this quarterback. When Anthony Richardson is in this game, it's all run plays. It's all exotic runs with the quarterbacks and deep shots down the field. So my defensive backs, there's no reason for you to press. I want you to be off and inside and back because that's where everything's going. If he completes a 5-yard out, you let him have that. That's not what they want to do anyways. So that's what you give up, understanding what you want to give up when each quarterback is in the game and how you want to say, okay, if they do all these things this way, we want them to play left-handed. So we want to make – if they beat us doing something that they don't normally do, then they were the better team that day. But defensively going into it, you want to play more zone defense early. So now your eyes are on the quarterback and your eyes are in the backfield. So now you're ready to react if the quarterback pulls it on a run or if the quarterback does some other things. And it also keeps you gap sound up front. You don't have to react off of your man blocking. Now I have to react to the run.
I want to zip to a couple other games quickly because obviously this is the game that we're talking so much about today.
I love it.
But the Penn State-Auburn game, we just got through talking to Holly Rowe once again, talking about the crowd.
The crowd, yes. I think this crowd is a little different because it's an environment that nobody's been in before. Nobody in that Auburn locker room has been there. Carnell Williams can tell you about what it's like going to Florida, or he can tell you what sure. it's like to go and play at LSU at night. He can go and tell you what it's like to be in the Iron Bowl if you've never been that or done that before. And they've been to all these other SEC schools and campuses and know what that's like in those stadiums. But nobody's been to Happy Valley. Nobody knows what it's truly like to be in a quote-unquote whiteout environment.
Is it an advantage?
It has to be an advantage. I think automatically it's 7 to 10 points for Penn State off the bus. Now, that doesn't mean Auburn.
So at 7:30 tomorrow night, it's 10-0 Penn State.
10-0 off the rip. It's 10-0, Paul.
That's a lot of points for that series, right?
But Auburn has to have that mentality.
Okay.
If you come in with that mentality that we have to out-hit Penn State that much so early, that is how we will take the crowd out of it. So now it evens out the playing field. You have to play like you're behind early in this game to understand that is the type of effort and momentum. That's what you're going to have to go against early to take that crowd out of it.
So when you were in the NFL with the Saints or the Panthers, where did you go where you were down before it started?
Seattle was always a place. Philadelphia was another place. But Philly was so unique because the goal was you wanted them to boo by halftime. If you're winning, doing it right.
They may be so much against the home team, you're up by 10.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. If you know how you're doing, depending on.
They're rough fans.
If they boo at halftime, you got them. Seattle's fans are not as quick to boo. They're not going to do that. They're going to stay loyal to their people. Also, Kansas City's another place that just it gets extremely loud. But Seattle's is better because it's more consistent. They're obvious in what they're trying to get accomplished as a fans.
I'm curious about that. Would a Kansas City or Seattle crowd be similar to a college crowd?
I think it's – yes, very much so. I think it's louder. I've been in these stadiums. I've been in a lot of these college stadiums. And I think the college stadiums are not as loud sometimes because I don't think everybody knows what they're looking at. Right. I truly feel that way. They're just – a lot of times people are just there having a good time because it's a thing to do. And it's a thing that the parents have done for so long and so generations, and that's just what it is. Versus I think sometimes NFL's a little bit
passionate. And a pro crowd, yeah. I mean, if you go to a pro football game, you're invested.
Yeah.
And you're also probably drunk.
That's true, too. You know, they don't serve like that in a lot of these college stadiums. So that is a lot of the things. That's why you see so many fights. You see so many other actions. I mean, my father-in-law got to a fisticuffs one time. So it happened.
Was somebody criticizing your play?
No. It was somebody else. It was a long story. It's in San Diego. The West Coast, man. Anytime you go out there, you never know what you're going to get.
He didn't even know that you were related. Somebody said, that guy, he's terrible.
And I'll be honest with you, Paul. We were losing the game until the fisticuffs happened. And then the whole momentum changed of the game.
Did you know what was going on?
No, I had no idea. But I've heard about it after the game. And then afterwards, they're like, oh, well, that's when we made the comeback was when the fisticuffs happened. So it's part of those things.
Next week we talk about that right here with Roman's moment. Roman, thank you. It's always fun.
Paul,
never know what you're going to get with you.
We always just kind of go. It's okay. We have no plan.
There's no script here, by the way.
No plan.
Roman's father-in-law's fisticuffs. That's a new 30 for 30. Scott Strickland, he's the athletic director at the University of Florida. He'll be with us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
The demand for excellence for every sport is the same. You also find out this is a pretty well thought of academic institution. Let me say hello to Scott Strickland,
thank you, Paul.
The athletic director down here.
On behalf of our president, Dr. Kent Fox, had some big news this week at the University of Florida. U.S. News and World Report named the University of Florida one of the top five public institutions in our country, up there with UCLA and Michigan and Virginia. And so I'd like to present to you, on behalf of the university, a top five UF T-shirt. Hope you'll wear it proudly the rest of the weekend.
I will. It's the right color.
Yeah, perfect.
And I'm proud to be I'll just tell people I graduated here and they'll think I'm smart. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, campus is really proud.
That
as
is amazing.
Gators have a long history of athletic success and finishing the top five in the national all sports repeatedly. But it's the first time the University of Florida been listed among the top five public universities. And from obviously the academic mission, that's really important for this
that
campus.
Is really significant. And it's deserving of every accolade that comes its way. Scott, great to have you. This is quite a weekend. Everyone has been anticipatory of this matchup. I'm sure for you it creates ticket demands, it creates all kinds of demand. What's it like getting ready for something like this as the athletic director?
Oh, it's there's a buzz, right? And it's fun. And this is kind of the juice that, we do what we do for is to have opportunities to have people engaged in our campus and see our teams get to compete in a high-profile competition. It's reminiscent. The Alabama people probably won't like to hear this, but it's reminiscent from a couple of years ago when Auburn was here. And the reason that was unique was Auburn was undefeated at the time, but it was also the first time in a dozen years Auburn had been to the Swamp, much like the first time in 10 years that Alabama's been here. And so anytime you get one of the one of these traditional high-powered schools from the SEC and one of these other football programs on our campus, and it's been a while since they've been here, it makes it special. And then you add in the fact that Alabama's defending national champion and they're number one team in the country, and all that they've accomplished. There's a lot of excitement, and these people out here are going to have a lot of fun tomorrow.
Yeah, they are.
And we'll have 90,000 of their best friends with them.
Yeah, I remember being down here. It was a Saturday night game, prime time on CBS. Will Muschamp versus Nick Saban. I mean, things have changed.
Things have changed. But, you know, that speaks to, you know, we've got to find a way to create these kind of matchups more often. And as we go forward having conversations about what our future league scheduling looks like, I think this is going to be something that's a priority for all the schools.
And I want to ask you about that, because not only is Scott a very influential athletic director in college athletics, he's also served on the CFP, which I'll get to in a second. But I don't want to bury the lead here about where the conference is going. We've talked to Commissioner Sankey about it. He's opened the door a little bit to the window of where things are going. You all had a meeting a couple weeks ago, the right. athletic director. So how do you determine at some point how to make this work?
I think it's an opportunity. You know, in some ways, I think scheduling 16-team league, maybe easier than 14, for the very fact that you can divide 16 evenly more often than you can 14.
Yes, you can.
But I also think it's going to force our hand to create more rotation, which means you're going to give up you're going to have fewer permanent matchups.
Right
now we have of our 8 conference games, 7 of them are the same every year. Mm-hmm. And that's I don't think anybody – that creates staleness in our scheduling. And as great as the SEC is, as special as the 14 schools, soon to be 16 schools are, that's an opportunity for us to figure out how to have fewer permanents but more rotation, so we end up seeing everyone else more often and create more of these kind of opportunities. You think about some of the great matchups. I know you guys have talked about it, but once Texas and Oklahoma come in the league, could you see, I mean, you're going to see obviously Alabama and Texas and Oklahoma and Florida and Georgia and Texas, but then if we can create more rotation, you'll see more Florida, Alabama, and Tennessee, Auburn, and some of those games that have meant a lot in the history of our league that we just don't see very often these days.
No, and I mean, this particular game, and I've been to all of them, is very unique and very unusual, other than in a championship game.
Right.
And it really is fun to have something like this happen. Let me ask you about your other position where you have served. You served 3 years on the CFP?
I did, yeah. And I'm off of it now.
Now you can talk. Now you can tell us what really goes on. I've been waiting for this interview for many years. That is such an interesting experience, I'm sure, for you. What did you take away that...
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now that you're not doing it, you're relaxed a little bit, because back then you're watching everything.
Right. Well, it's really hard to take a universe of 130 schools and slot 4 of them in a playoff. That's a really hard, challenging thing to do, right? I mean, that's just the math doesn't work. And even if you just look at the Power 5 of 65 schools into 4 slots, that's really hard. the committee members really take what they do seriously. Everyone watches a ton of games. You follow, you know intricately who the backup left tackle at Purdue is. Wow. I mean, you really dig into.
Do you get a conference or part of the country?
You get assigned a conference that you keep up with, and so you make sure that you know what's going on in the conferences you're assigned to, and then you share that with your other committee members. And it is, there's a lot of attention paid to the details of making sure we get it right. Understanding is 13 people in the room who are subjective. Right. There's no objective way to do it, and that's what creates the controversy. But the members on that committee really do their level best to make sure they get it right, regardless of the logo on the uniform or anything else. They want to make sure that they get it right. Really what they look at is they don't look at conference affiliation. They don't look at, they look at who your team is. But the main thing they look at is who have you played, who'd you beat, and if you lost the game, what were the circumstances there? Right. And there's a lot of time spent looking at resumes, comparing resumes along those lines.
It's one thing if you didn't do anything else, but you also were running a massive athletic department here. How do you keep up with everything that's happening on your campus while you're spending, a day and a half out in Texas?
We have a great staff, and it's unfortunately the dirty little secret is I don't do much around here, Paul. That's really what it amounts to. But we have a phenomenal staff, and people who really are the ones who make the University of Florida athletic program hum along and support our 500 student athletes and our 21 sports. And but they if you didn't have that, it would be really challenging, because you're right, it's a day and a half, 2 days a week for six or seven straight weeks to head to Dallas and sit around and be a part of that committee.
Yeah, and fortunately, I think things have gone fairly well, went fairly well during your tenure, I think. I'm trying to remember, do the math in my head, but there are times when you do have coaching searches and other things that get in the way.
Fortunately, I didn't have a coaching search. I had colleagues, other committee members who had coaching searches while they were on the committee, and I always kind of marveled at that. Fortunately, we have not had that, and the Gators had pretty good years the years I was on, which makes it nice as well.
I bring that up, and not to go through the hiring of Dan Mullen, but there was an article out the other day that detailed it. It was in intricate details, and you find out in these things that everyone has feelings, and you don't want to hurt them. And the circumstances, for those of you who don't know, Scott and his wife are Mississippi State people, lived there most of your life. You went to a couple of other SEC schools. You were the athletic director there, and you were here and ended up hiring Dan Mullen away from your own school. Yeah, I bring that up because we've talked to Commissioner Sankey about some of the things that have gone on with him and friends of his who are in the same field. And I just wonder, because I have friends that won't talk to me about the slightest things that have happened in the past. How do you get along with people when things like this happen?
There's a level of professionalism, I have a great relationship with Dr. Keenum and John Cohen at Mississippi State. And, I have family that, on a Saturday, if the Bulldogs are at home in Starkville, that's where they're going to be. And they may call and ask me how the Gators did. And that's part of it, right? But, there's an incredible collegiality. Everyone, the people who work in college athletics take it really seriously this is our livelihood. But I think it's hard for fans to understand that it's a job at the end of the day, and it's a job you're trying to do really well, and you care about the people that you're working with, and you care about the schools where you are working. But fans can pour their heart and soul into one school, and there's no consequences to that. When this is your livelihood, you have to worry about people's lives. You have to worry about decisions are going to impact the institution where you're working, and sometimes you have to take the emotion out of it, and that's really hard for fans, because their whole involvement in the sport is based on emotion. It's just a different perspective that I think is unique to those of us who work in the profession.
When you do go back to see your family, are they speaking to you?
People are pretty nice to me. Here's the trick, I actually am a season ticket holder at Mississippi State to this day. I still buy season tickets, and I give all those tickets to my family, so that's why they're still nice to me.
That will do it every time.
Absolutely.
In the SEC.
Graft and corruption.
Tickets do matter. Well, it is a really interesting read about what Scott went through as he was hiring Dan Mullen, and that's the part that got me the most. I think it was during Thanksgiving or sometime or Christmas, and your family was back there, and you were just hoping the story didn't break while your wife was at church.
Yeah, but you know, at the end of the day, my responsibility is to do what's best for the University of Florida, sure. And obviously Dan's a fantastic coach, and really feel fortunate to have a chance to work with him again here and see what he's doing here for the Gators.
Well, congratulations to the university. I'll get this right.
Yeah, thank you.
Number four ranking.
If you can promote that a little more, that'd be great.
Top five in the country. That is truly remarkable.
Thank you, Paul.
I will wear this at every SEC site and be the most popular person I get. Thanks so much, Scott. It's always great
Paul.
To see you.
Appreciate it. Go Gators.
Scott Strickland joining us, the director of athletics here at the University of Florida.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back here live from the University of Florida. We have moved outside. That's why it may look a little bit different. It is great to be here. Great to get outside. The thunderstorms have moved on. Let's get to the calls, though, and I'll waste a minute because we have a lot of guests coming up here in the final 2 hours. Let's go to Al in Connecticut. Hey, Al.
Hey. Hi, Paul. Calling you from the SEC powerhouse state of Connecticut, and had a question for you about the depth of the Alabama quarterbacks. Now, should an unfortunate incident like COVID or an injury happen to Bryce Young, how do you think their other quarterbacks would fare against Florida?
Well, Paul Tyson is the next quarterback, and he has limited experience. For those who don't know the backstory on Paul Tyson, he is the great grandson of Paul Bryant. So he certainly has the lineage. I think it's very difficult to answer that question though, because we really have not. I mean, he was a very he was an outstanding high school quarterback, but to try to guess what he could do is somewhat difficult. Now, he certainly has the compliments around him, but I'm not willing to go out to go too far out on a limb to guess what he would be able to do against Florida.
Do you think Saban would change his approach and go running more, or just try to do something to keep his offense up?
I really don't think he would change a lot because I think you have a certain game plan in and the quarterbacks are prepared, and he is certainly, there's no question, I know Paul well, he is prepared for the moment, but it is not the deepest quarterback room that I've ever seen.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Corey is up next. Hey, Corey.
Oh, how you doing there?
Corey, we're doing great.
All right. This is Corey from Louisville. I just want to say, first of all, roll tie and come tomorrow. We're going to make a believer out of Florida. So all the little students there with their Florida shirts on, tell them they don't have a chance. They might as well go suit up Tim Tebow or see if they can bring back Steve Spurrier, because we're going to put it on them tomorrow. Secondly, about the Georgia and South Carolina game, let those South Carolina fans know they got a better chance of getting hit in the head by a comet than beating Georgia. Also, shout out to my boy, Skip.
Well, I hear you. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right. Roll Tide.
You got it. Good to hear from you. Wow. That's Scott is up next in Georgia. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, buddy? Longtime listener and viewer and diehard Bulldog.
Great to hear from you.
I just want to tell you, I think I've came up, in the SEC, now all the teams have played many years here in the SEC. And we all know in the SEC, if you don't have your A game when you play another SEC team, you can get beat. And all the schools know this. And I think that's why the fan bases are so excited when South Carolina's coming to Georgia or Alabama's going to Florida, that you automatically have that in your mind that, hey, if we play our A game and they don't, we can win. This is the SEC. But, that's what makes our fans different. Our fans never say, who's your favorite team? It's Alabama. It's never Alabama and Oregon. It's never Alabama and Oklahoma. You have one team, and that's the only team you care about. And you I mean, you will die for that team. I mean, it's that hard. Bobby Bowden was asked why he didn't join the SEC, and he said he didn't want his guys to play a bowl game every single week because that's what it's like playing in the SEC. So that's the reason that South Carolina thinks they're going to beat Georgia and Florida thinks they're going to beat Alabama.
And let me say this. I understand enthusiasm of fans. And I tell you what happens, too, Scott. I think you see it a little bit more at this point in the season. Scott, South Carolina has not had anything to cheer about for years. And, you know, Auburn has had some tough times. So they win two games. They look good. Auburn has certainly looked extremely good. South Carolina was, you know, won a game on a field goal. So you do build up a lot of enthusiasm. And then in South Carolina's case, you're going to play at Georgia where you won 2 years ago. So you're starting to think, well, maybe that has something to do with it. I never believed that those things have a lot to do with anything. But that's why this is fun. I mean, I challenge callers because all I want is when you say I think South Carolina as a 31-point underdog is going to be Georgia – I just want some explanation other than I think they're going to. That's all. I'm not being cranky about it. I'm just trying to find out. Do you know something I don't know?
Yeah, get where their logic's at. Where's your logic on that discussion? How are you going to beat a 31-point deficit?
Well, it does happen. Nobody thought Jacksonville State was going to beat Florida State. Last week they were a 28-point underdog, and you see this. It is very rare, though, and quite frankly, it's extremely rare in the SEC.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, Paul, just so you'll have this information as well, is I am not going to accept the USC coaching job.
Well, that makes two of us. I don't think I can live in LA right now. We're back with two more hours.